Here we go. First snap of the overtime. The Broncos have been in three overtime games this year. They won them all. Got him at the 40. It's Thomas at the 50. Stiff arm got him. Green to the 30. To the 20. Thomas to the 10. Denver's going on the New England. They win it on the first play of overtime.
Okay, welcome to the Blitzburg podcast, the season recap edition for the 2011 Steelers. It's a sad podcast following the Steelers' 29-23 loss at Denver. We have George here with us from our site. I'm Bam from Blitzburg Blog. And a special guest, Ian, from the Steelers and Nat, is here as well.
Hey, guys.
Just to get us rolling here, I listened to some sports talk around Pittsburgh yesterday, read all the columns. Obviously, people are upset, and the big question seems to be, after a shocking loss like this, who should we be blaming? Who should the fans kind of push their anger onto? Personally, I don't really agree with a reaction like that, but it's still an interesting question to ask. And Ian, I'll start with you here. After watching that game and the quick ending in overtime, what one or two people or coaches do you think kind of deserves the most wrath after that loss?
Well, to be honest, usually I try and keep an objective approach and try and be rational in my analysis of the games. But being a couple of days out from this loss, I still say that the coaches deserve most of the blame. I feel like we got out-coached on both sides of the ball. I felt like watching the game, Denver had a game plan coming in. They executed it. They knew what they wanted to do to attack us, which was basically they were going to run the ball to bring our safeties up, and then they were going to play NFL blitz and run the bomb over the top. And, just hope their receivers can make some catches, which they did. And it really enabled Tebow to not have to make very precise throws. He could just throw it up there and hope his guys could catch it. Whereas for the Steelers, there was times, especially on defense, where we looked totally unprepared for what Denver was running. James Harrison's a heck of a player, but there was a couple times he got caught flat-footed trying to defend an option like he'd never seen it before. And, I mean, if you're playing Denver, you would think that would be something you would prepare for in the week before the game. I could see if, a team like Baltimore or New England ran it and you had no preparation, but that's coming with Denver and the way they run their offense. And our offense, another game, I'm not a Bruce Arians fan to begin with, so it was, for me, another game, another failed game plan if there was one. I really couldn't find any consistency in what they were trying to do. It seemed to me, once again, like the schoolyard Arians offense, where it's just, we're going to let the guys run around and hope Ben can extend the play and find somebody with his feet, rather than having specific plays that get guys open, which helps get you points on the board. So I'm saying the coaches. I'm saying we got out-coached. I really like Tomlin. I love Dick LeBeau. I don't like Arians, but I feel like all three of them are where the blame should go on this one.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely wasn't Mike Tomlin or Dick LeBeau's finest hour, to say the least. George, what are your thoughts? Do you think the coaches deserve the lion's share of the blame, or is there a player or two, specifically Ike Taylor, that kind of blew it?
I don't know. As far as players go, I mean, Ike Taylor gets all the publicity, publicity if there is one, but it was just like the entire team didn't seem to have anything going. Ike Taylor was just the one who happened to be covering the receiver, in this case, Demaryius Thomas, who got most of the passing yards. Harrison, all the linebackers, everyone on defense. I could just pretty much name everyone on defense, and they just didn't make anything, make any big, like, game-changing plays. Like, I kept waiting for, like, there was the Willis McGahee fumble, and that was it, pretty much. Like, there was no big sack, no big interception, no, I hate to say momentum, because momentum isn't really it's a mediocre concept, but there was no big play on defense to turn the tide the other way, to at least get something going. And so the question is that just linebackers not getting to Tebow? Is it lack of coverage, lack of tackling? Or was it the schemes didn't allow them to do that? I think it's a combination of both. As you said, the defense just didn't seem prepared for what the what Denver was doing, and I also kind of liked the fact that there were articles appearing on Twitter, like like Sunday morning, that were saying the Broncos have packages for Brady Quinn, and that didn't happen at all. It was kind of I mean there wasn't, I guess, a reason to, but I almost wonder if that was just a smokescreen.
The most troubling thing to me was the Steelers' lack of adjustments on defense. I think the aggressive game plan, playing 8-9 guys in the box made sense, but after Tebow had burned the single coverage a couple times, I felt like the Steelers needed to kind of shift into more of their base defense, at least keep one or two safeties up top, and that never happened. And whether it's LeBeau being stubborn and sticking to his guns, or I'm not really sure what the Steelers saw there, but to me, that was the biggest failure, I guess, of the game.
And I think the biggest sort of, I don't know if it's a problem, but like with a loss like that, there's so much blame that you should spread it around, not place it on any one coach or player. But then you see a stat like I saw somewhere, it was on Twitter somewhere, but it was something like there were 200-something yards, passing yards, to where Ike Taylor was, and it was like the highest number of passing yards given up by one cornerback in however many games they had charted. It was like thousands of games, NFL games that they charted, and that was 200 some yards was the most ever to one cornerback. And that's the type of thing that you see that and you think, wow, Ike Taylor had a terrible game. But it wasn't just him, it was everyone.
I agree with that, but I was kind of, going back through my memory of, Steelers history, and as ironic as it is, Ike has always played horrible against the Broncos. If you think back to that game in 2006 at Heinz Field when Cowher benched him, I mean, that was against the Broncos too, and he got lit up by Brandon Marshall that game. So, I mean, Ike's a great corner. I love Ike. Ike can shut Chad Ochocinco down all day, but for some reason, when the Broncos are on the other side, he just gets lit up. I don't know what it is.
Well, that's not as good of a that's not as good of an accomplishment as it was a few years ago.
That's true.
To me, I blame as much of Ike's poor day on James Harrison and Lamar Woodley generating no pressure as I do Ike himself. You know, given the aggressive scheme that the Steelers had, if you let Tebow run around for 6 or 7 seconds like the Steelers did a lot, you know, I don't care if it's Ocho Cinco, Demaryius Thomas, Wes Welker. I mean, you can name the receiver. It could be Tyler Grisham that Ike's trying to cover. He's going to get some separation after 6 or 7 seconds. You know, and you know, the Steelers knew, I think, that that was a possibility, but they didn't envision Tebow being able to make those throws. And you know, to the guy's credit, he made some great throws, you know, specifically the touchdown pass over William Gay, who had excellent coverage, but Tebow, you know, made a picture-perfect pass. And, you know, that kind of brings up my next point. I wanted to shift focus off the Steelers just a little bit and, you know, do what everybody else is doing and talk about Tim Tebow. And did Tebow's performance on Sunday change the way you view him? Is he... you know, able to be a great passer in the NFL, is that a breakout game for him, or just an aberration?
I'm going to take a rare middle road here with Tebow, because it seems like there is no middle road with Tebow, but I don't know if it was specifically a breakout game. He didn't really... The throw over William Gay was a great throw. It was almost the exact same pass that Jordy Nelson caught over Gay in the Super Bowl that Aaron Rodgers just put right on the spot. Now, that was a heck of a throw. I mean, Tebow was 10 for 21 passing, so to say that this was a breakout game when a lot of his throws were just bombs down the field that his guys ran under, I don't know if I'd say that. You know, coming into this game, I'd only seen the Broncos once, and that was their game against the Patriots. And the one thing I noticed from that game was Tebow was really good at hitting that intermediate post route, like 17, 18 yards down the field. You know, he'd run a little play action fake, take one step back, plant his back foot, and he was able to gun it in there right on the post. And that was actually pretty much the play that they won the game on. So I really wasn't surprised when I saw them run it at the end of the game, because they ran it a couple times earlier in the game. But the one thing I will say about Tebow, just from, you know, listening to the radio and listening to other, you know, sources, is he's a heck of a worker. And, you know, Tunch and Wolf were saying that, you know, he was out there and threw like 300 balls before the game just as his warm up. And they asked one of the like the Denver media guys if that was rare, if he did that all the time, and they said no, he does that every day in practice too. Like, he goes out, throws 150 balls, and then, you know, puts his jersey on, he'll go out, throw 150 more, and then he's ready for practice. Whereas a normal quarterback will just throw, like, in the 75 to 90 range to warm their arm up. So, I mean, this guy's a heck of an athlete, and he's got the work ethic that, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the prettiest form right now, and he's not a great passer yet, but he'll put the work in and do everything he can to get there. So, you know, I'm not saying this is a breakout game for him, but I'm also, you know, not saying that he will never amount to anything in the league either.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. George, I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot of people are trying to figure out this week if the Steelers blew the game, or if, you know, Tebow made enough plays in Denver, you know, beat the Steelers fair and square, you know, especially with all the injuries that the Steelers had. You know, kind of, what are your thoughts on that? Did the Steelers lose the game, or did Denver win it?
I think I'm in the camp of Denver won it, because it seemed like the game plan on offense was, we don't think that your quarterback can make the throws necessary to beat us over the air, or beat us through the air. And as it turns out, on Sunday, Tebow was able to do that. So yeah, I think I'm in that camp where, I mean, if you want to argue that, hey, that's not what the scheme should have been, well, okay, you can certainly make that argument. But from what transpired on the field, I think Like, I saw the yards per pass attempt was something like around 16, which was just off the charts. Like 10 yards per pass attempt is considered good. So when you see 16, that's like seeing seeing 220 yards rushing by a running back. It's that high. So
I agree with you. I think, you know, the Steelers gave Denver the opportunity to make plays. I mean, they dared Tebow to make plays, and he did. You know, every time it seemed like he threw the ball up in the air, they were running for 50, 60 yards. All right, I think with that, we'll kind of close the book on the Denver game. I'm hoping this is the last time I talk about it. Unless anybody else...
Actually, can I chime in with one more thought here?
Sure thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna sort of play devil's advocate here. I do agree with George fundamentally that, you know, Denver won the game, but I want to point to 2 points in the game specifically where the Steelers lost it, and that was with 1:05 to go in the first half and with 1:37 to go in the second half. They got the ball at their own 20 both times and had a chance to go down and kick a field goal. They got past midfield both times, and then Ligurski snapped it over Ben's head, and then in the second half, Ben took a sack. Doomerville got in on a 3-man rush and stripped the ball out, which when you've got 5 or 6 guys blocking 3, your quarterback should have all day to throw. And then Ben obviously got sacked on 4th down, too. So, I mean, those 2 drives at the end of both of those halves, the Steelers had a chance to win this game, and Ben's been clutch his whole career and just couldn't put a drive together either of those times. We got it across the 50, but just couldn't quite get it into field goal range to even give Sweesum a chance.
Well, the one may have been, I can't remember now exactly. I mean, the one was probably on Ligurski, that high snap.
Right.
Which I don't know if Pouncey was in there if there wouldn't have been any high snaps, but I mean, Ligurski had been okay at center when Pouncey was out.
I guess my bigger point was just that the Steelers had opportunities where they could have won the game, and they let those opportunities slide.
Yeah.
So.
And it comes back to, you know, the Steelers' old Achilles heel, which is the offensive line. You know, I don't think you can hang those 2 failures on Roethlisberger. You know, I would have certainly liked him to have thrown the ball away instead of taking a sack. I mean, you really can't take a sack there at the end of the game. But, you know, he's not expecting to have Elvis Doomerville in his face after a couple seconds on a 3-man rush either. So, you know, plenty of blame to spread around there. But I wanted to kind of look back on the Steelers season as a whole. It was a really kind of a bizarre year. You know, the horrendous loss at Baltimore to start the year, kind of bookended with the playoff loss, or, you know, 2 of the worst and most painful losses in recent memory. But, you know, there were certainly some good moments that happened this season as well. George, is there anything that sticks out? You know, is something positive that you'll remember from the season?
I'd say the New England game for sure, where being able to keep, like, that was probably the defense's best game of the year, because they were able to keep Tom Brady below 20 points. Any time a Tom Brady-led offense scores less than 20 points, it's a really good day. So, I don't know, sweeping Cleveland is always good.
Ian, does anything stand out to you along the same lines?
I'd say watching the emergence of Antonio Brown. I mean, it's not every day you see a 7th-round draft pick out of, or sorry, 6th-round draft pick out of Central Michigan, you know, set a be the first person in the NFL to achieve something. And I mean, 1,000 receiving yards and 1,000 returning yards in the same year is no small feat. I mean, it was pretty incredible to watch. And he was exciting every time he got his hands on the ball. And, you know, he definitely deserved the MVP. I know there were some questions about it. I looked into some stats. I think he had 28 receptions on third down, and like 14 of those were when we were in third and nine or longer, which is, I mean, that's pretty incredible as it is that, you know, half of his third down catches, we were in third and nine or longer. So, you know, I had a lot of fun watching Antonio Brown this year. Mike Wallace was a little bit of a disappointment the second half of the year. I don't know if, you know, Brown's emergence kind of got in his head, or he just didn't seem like he was running as crisp a routes. I mean, I know they kind of tried to change up what they were doing with him. They had him running some shorter stuff instead of going over the top. But even when they tried to go over the top to him, he dropped a couple. So, you know, I'm still a big Wallace fan, but watching Brown was a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. You know, I think one thing that I'll really remember from the year, too, was kind of the emergence of the whole Young Money family on the Steelers, including Brown. But, you know, I think the playoff loss definitely signals the changing of the guard for the Steelers. And we got to see some of these young Steelers step in and contribute this year. You know, guys like Cam Hayward and Ziggy Hood played really big roles. Wesley Saunders at tight end, an undrafted free agent who I really like. I mean, he was out there even being targeted by Roethlisberger on some big plays. So that's always exciting. I think, you know, Jason Worlds is another guy who played a ton this year. Didn't look great, but he's still young. And it's the most kind of inflection of new talent that I think the Steelers have seen in several years. And I want to chime in, too. Brian, our other writer at Blitzburg Blog, some technical difficulties, he couldn't be here, but he emailed some of his answers to the best moments, and he said that the Tom Brady sack fumble and Polamalu punching the ball into the end zone for the safety in that Pat Steelers game, he said that was 2011's crowning moment, and I'll agree. That was you know, one of the few times this year that I was kind of standing up off my couch and just pure joy running through me, so that's a you know, definitely something that I don't think anybody will forget. Just a couple other questions for you guys, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. But on the other side of the coin, what were some of the biggest disappointments season-long for you? You know, obviously the playoff loss is going to be the one that everybody remembers. But, you know, it was a rough season, you know, for a lot of different players and for a lot of different reasons. So, George, I'll start with you. What were the biggest disappointments for you this year?
I'd say one was just the inconsistency of the whole team in general. Like you'd have like 1 week just a dominating win, and then another week you would. Another week, you'd barely squeak by Indianapolis. It just didn't seem like there was any. Like, in the end, taking it all together, you had a good team. But there were enough chinks in the armor where you'd go. This team isn't the same as even last year's team. It was this team was capable of making a run, but it wasn't likely to. I'd say the second was the run defense. Like, it's been, like, I put in my preview post that it was the first time that the Steelers' run defense had ranked out of the top 10 in DVOA since 2002. Like, that's a really long stretch of dominant run defense that was snapped this year. You could sort of see it coming, but it kind of just came out of the blue, pretty much. Because you still had all of the pieces there. Keys O'Hampton, and Harrison and Woodley, and all the rest. They just were either injured or just didn't make as many plays as last year. So I'd say those were the two biggest disappointments for me.
Ian, anything stick out to you on the disappointing side for 2011?
Yeah, I would say I'm trying to think how to phrase this. The marked exclusion of Hines Ward from the offense was a big disappointment for me. I mean, I know he got to his 1,000 catches and everything, and probably one of the weirdest stats of the season is if you look at, you know, Hines Ward's catches by game, in games when he had three or more catches, we were 9-1. And in games when he had two or less catches, actually, he didn't have two catches in any game. So in games where he had one or zero catches, I think we were 2-4, which is including the Denver game where he had no catches. That's also including the second Baltimore game where he got injured right at the beginning of the game. And then he didn't play in the New England game because he had a bum ankle. But still, I mean, I know that, you know, the offense doesn't roll through him, and a lot of those games he racked on some catches at the end of games when we were already winning. But still, I mean, and it's probably the weirdest stat of the season for me that we were 9-1 when Hines had three or more catches, and you know, they seemed like he wasn't even part of the game plan for the Denver game. You know, I mean, this is a guy that's been with you, and from what I could tell from watching him, was still capable of getting open and capable of making catches. I mean, even when he was chasing the 1,000, you know, he caught a couple balls over the middle of the field where he got open. I mean, it wasn't all those, you know, wide receiver screens and shovel passes, which, you know, they ran towards the end, but he caught a couple to, you know, across the middle to pick up some first downs here and there. So that was disappointing for me. And then, you know, just the injuries as a whole. I mean, it seemed like I actually looked through our roster, and I think tight end was the only position we did not have a significant injury at, because a quarterback, Leftwich, went down in the preseason. And then, you know, Ben battled through injuries all year, as he usually does behind our patchwork offensive line. We lost Mendenhall, Jonathan Dwyer, Mwelde Moore, Baron Batch, who looked impressive in the preseason, or at least in camp. I mean, that's a stable full of running backs that we lost throughout the season. You know, offensive line, we lost guys here and there. Kimuatsu was in and out with injuries and just horrible, horrible play. Pouncey was out for games here and there. Willie Colon, we lost at the beginning of the year in the Baltimore game with, I think, he tore his triceps. And, you know, wide receiver, Hines missed a game. Manny Sanders missed a bunch of games. And then on defense, I mean, George already kind of touched on it. We lost Aaron Smith. Casey Hampton went down for a couple games. Chris Hoke, Kiesel at the end. Actually, Kiesel missed a game earlier in the year, too, I believe. Harrison and Woodley both missed time. Farrier missed a game. Foot was dinged up a little bit. And then in the secondary, you know, we lost some of our young corners that came in our sub packages, where, you know, Cortez Allen, our fourth round pick out of the Citadel, had probably the game of his career so far against Rob Gronkowski in the New England game. Gronk still had some catches, but I remember watching that game, and I was actually at that game, and what I saw was whenever New England lined Gronk up in the backfield, like as a fullback, that was when he was getting open. But whenever he was on the line, Allen was press covering him and bumping him off the line, and Gronk just didn't do anything when Allen press covered him. So, I mean, that kid has some huge upside. Curtis Brown was our special teams leader in tackles. He went down. You know, Ryan Clark missed the Denver game, and, you know, Troy seemed to find his way onto the injury report with a injury listed here or there. He still played in all the games, which was good, but you know, they kind of did some different things schematically with Troy this year. With what George touched on with how our run defense was, we had to bring Troy down to the box a lot more to defend against the run, and he wasn't, you know, back there to make those interceptions and make those splash plays when he can, you know, sit over the top and read the quarterback. And a couple of times he was able to sit back in that zone. You know, if you think about the interception he made against Cleveland and some of the other, I think he had only had two interceptions on the year. You know, he was up in the box more, so he wasn't able to make those splash plays. So I think it all plays in together with, you know, you have some injuries, so that hurts you on the turnover front, which was also disappointing. And then, yeah, it was just it was a season of missed opportunities. We had them throughout the year, and we just were never able to put it together. Besides the Tennessee game and the New England game, were the two where everything really clicked. And I guess the Cincinnati game where we put up 35 on them, we clicked everything together there too. But I mean, if you're only going to put it together for three games out of a 16-game schedule, we're blessed to be 12-4.
Yeah, and I think, you know, years like this make you appreciate, you know, even like the 2010 Steelers that lost in the Super Bowl. It's, you know, one of the great things about the NFL is the parity, and it's so hard to win. And, you know, the Steelers have a great talented roster of, you know, experienced guys, but, you know, a wild card like injuries can just come in and devastate your team. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what seemed to have happened to the Steelers this year. You know, one thing that I'll also always remember from this year, kind of as a disappointment, was the front office's decision to stick with Jonathan Scott at the start of the year as the starting left tackle. That was something that I was really upset about in the offseason. You know, I said it would be a disaster if they started with Scott, and, you know, sure enough, they did, and everybody saw how well that went. You know, in the first couple games, even into the Indianapolis game, which was the game that kind of caused the Steelers to reach out to Max Starks. But, you know, even a little personnel decision like that had, I think, a dramatic effect on the season as a whole, just because the Steelers stumbled out of the gate and struggled so much right off the start. And, you know, to be honest, I don't know that the bad taste in the mouth from that first Baltimore game ever really left the Steelers. And I don't know if you guys would agree with me on that or not, but it just felt like the stink that game caused, it just kind of lingered, at least for me, throughout the whole year. So just wrapping up here, I just have two quick questions for you guys. The first one, Steelers related. What is one thing that the Steelers need to change heading into next year? You know, just a quick summary of something that needs to change for them to get back to an elite status. George, I'll start with you.
I'd say the biggest one is just getting healthy, whether that's through conditioning of the current players, getting them back to healthy, or drafting at key positions in the upcoming draft, people that can step in for injury-prone guys currently on the roster, better, I guess, lock on injuries, so that you don't have a revolving door at left tackle or a lack of pressure on the quarterback. I guess pressure on the quarterback would be the biggest on-field thing, whether that comes from healthier defensive players or new blood, because there were way too many times where there was nothing. The quarterback had all the time in the world to throw. I'd say those are my big things to change.
Ian, if you're Mike Tomlin, if you're Kevin Colbert, what are you doing in the offseason? You know, what's the biggest priority for you?
The biggest priority for me, well, I haven't been a fan of the Bruce Arians offense ever since he started here. he racks up a bunch of yards, you know, between the 20s, but we don't put points on the board. And if you look back at, you know, where the Steelers offense has ranked, I mean, the league has moved away from being a running league to being a passing league. And that's fine. You know, I'm an old school guy. I would prefer a running game, but, you know, I'm fine with moving towards being a passing team. But the thing with being a passing team is you need plays that are specifically designed to get guys open in the red zone so that you can put touchdowns on the board instead of field goals. And if you look at teams like Green Bay, teams like New England, teams like New Orleans that have these elite offenses, they're putting up a ton of points. And the Steelers can put up yards with these guys all day, but they don't have, and we have the playmakers on the field that can make big plays, but we never seem to put enough points on the board. I mean, I think we've averaged in the mid to low 20s, you know, probably between 21 and 24 points per game over probably, you know, I know the whole Tomlin era and probably back into the last Cowher era. I don't know the last time we averaged over 25 points a game. It's been a while that I can remember. And, you know, in Roger Goodell's NFL, where basically you're penalized for playing good defense, you know, we're going to have to adjust with the times, and we got to find a way to put points on the board. And part of that's being able to run the ball successfully in the red zone, which we didn't really do too well this year. You know, Mendenhall had a decent year. I actually thought he ran harder than I've seen him run in the past. You know, he hit the hole harder. He wasn't always looking to bounce it outside for the big one. He took what was there, and he was able to push the pile, you know, and get what he needed to get rather than dancing around and really not getting a whole lot. But, you know, we need to be more effective and more efficient on offense when we have those scoring opportunities. We have to get touchdowns instead of field goals. I mean, look at the Denver game. I mean, look at what just happened. You know, we had a drive at the middle of the fourth quarter where we settled for a field goal, where we drove it down into the red zone. I mean, we put up a touchdown there. It's a completely different game. You know, we had two field goals early in the game too. One was a 45-yarder, which is, you know, long range, but the other one was I think it was a 35-yarder. So, I mean, we were in the red zone there too. You got to put points on the board if you're going to win in today's NFL, and that's just how it is. I mean, the elite teams this year don't have a stellar defense. The old adage that offense wins games but defense wins championships might not necessarily be true in, you know, the NFL that Roger Goodell has created for us, because you've got Green Bay and New England, who are two of the worst passing defenses in the league, and New Orleans isn't much better, and they're probably the three Super Bowl contenders, or the three, you know, leaders in the Super Bowl chase right now.
Yeah, those are, you know, great points by both of you, and hopefully those are things that, you know, whether it's internal personnel changes, the draft, free agency, you know, the Steelers are going to have some chances to improve themselves, you know, and also getting healthy too, which shouldn't be too hard of a task. But it seems like there's something in the water of Pittsburgh these days that makes every athlete in town become very injury prone. Well, great stuff from both of you guys.
I just wanted to make a point on that, on the last thing. It seems like the Steelers offense, as it is right now, is designed for that 60-yard touchdown pass, which is great when it works, but as you said, when they get within the 25-yard line, it seems like they are just running the same play. Not the same plays, of course, but they don't thin the field. I don't know if that's the way I'm wording it right, but you have to adapt plays to a shorter field, and that's probably what they're not doing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It doesn't seem like they have a very good situational playbook, if that makes sense. It seems like they're pulling from the same set of plays all the time, regardless of the situation. definitely a frustrating part of the Mike Tomlin and Bruce Arians era. Last thing, I want to get your guys' Super Bowl prediction here. You know, now that the Steelers are out, we don't have to wait on who you guys think are going to win. We can just spill the beans here now. Brian's picking New Orleans. I'm going to say the Saints 2 over Baltimore in the Super Bowl. George, who you got?
I hate to make it close to unanimous, but I'm thinking of picking... I think I'll pick the Saints over New England.
Okay. And Ian, are you going to make it a clean sweep for New Orleans?
I do really like what New Orleans is doing right now, but I'm gonna go completely off the charts here, and I'm gonna go with the Giants over the Patriots.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that's a bold prediction. I like the Giants this weekend against the Packers. That's my upset special of the week, and obviously you do too. Thanks to both of you guys for coming on. Not the easiest week to talk about the Steelers, but you know, as usual, excellent stuff from both of you. So you can check out some posts on the Broncos and on the Steelers offseason this week on blitzburgblog.com from myself and George. Ian, you have anything cool coming up on your site? And why don't you go ahead and mention your Twitter handle as well?
Sure. I am the Steelers and at on Twitter. The Steelers NAT. So you can hit me up there. I post a lot more there than I do on my blog these days because I've got a 9-month-old baby, so it's a lot easier to type out 140 characters and hit send than it is to, you know, actually get an hour to sit down and bang out a blog post. But I'm trying to work on, I guess, what I'm going to call a requiem for the season and, you know, kind of look back at the season that was and, you know, go position by position and break down what happened with each position, who succeeded, who failed, and sort of a first look at the off season and, you know, what areas the Steelers might focus on. My gut's telling me that offensive line, nose tackle, and inside linebacker are probably the three positions we're going to need to focus on, you know, heading into free agency in the draft, but that can always change. I'm a big draft junkie, so I'll have plenty of draft stuff up on my website too, which is thesteelersandat.blogspot.com. So thanks for having me on, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you as always.
Yep, anytime, man. You know, we'll definitely have you back around draft time, and that's probably when our next podcast will be as well. So, until then, everybody take care and enjoy watching the rest of the playoffs.